Why do the global elites want unlimited Islamic immigration? We'll discuss that next.
We are right to constantly ask, what is the function of government, of our government? And that includes our broken immigration system that's crafted by cowards who are too terrified of being voted out of their ivory towers to do anything meaningful about it.
This is Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. Jan meets today with veteran journalist and author Leo Holman. Leo is an investigative reporter who recently released his latest book, Stealth Invasion. That title spent most of last year listed as one of Amazon.com's top 10 books on immigration policy. Immigration issues in these United States will be the focus of Jan and Leo's discussion this hour. Here now with Leo Holman, Jan Markell.
And welcome to the program. You know, we talk about news, views, truths from a decidedly biblical perspective. And I talked to author Leo Holman actually last July in a program titled Must We Love Our Neighbors If They Are Terrorists? And we're going to have an update from Leo today because of his incredible book. It's a 2017 book, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. And I'm going to head right into my interview because we have so many topics to try to cram into this particular hour. And Leo is a veteran journalist and, as I said, an author. And Leo, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back, Jan.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
Yeah, no, and I read your website, and frankly, I even post articles from your website onto my news headlines on a weekly basis. And you write, for instance, deep state attacks, government fusion centers are spying on patriots concerned about Islam. So I'm trying to read up here a little bit about fusion centers, because that word wasn't real familiar to me, and I'm learning that they seem to work with, as you say, non-traditional sources, including corporate America, to build threat assessments on people. Talk to me just a little bit about these fusion centers, and why should my listeners really be on the lookout?
The fusion centers came in under the Department of Homeland Security just a few years after the DHS was formed. As you recall, after 9/11 under the Bush administration, they said one of the problems that led to the attacks on 9/11, they thought, was that the different levels of law enforcement were not all interconnected enough and they weren't plugged into the community enough. So the government decided to set up these fusion centers, which are literally listening posts for the government, set up in all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
Every state has at least one, and many states have more than one. What they do is they are there to collect data on people in the community using third-party sources, like you said, and those could be universities, corporations, anybody who really is collecting data out there, which, as you know, there's a lot of people collecting data
right
in our modern technocratic society. Social media also collects a lot of data. These fusion centers will scan these various sources of data from disparate collectors. They could even, say, you know, share information with other states' fusion centers. And so they then interlock all of this information and share it. It goes back to the central fusion center database, and they analyze it. The whole word fusion means you're looking at more than one database, and you're fusing it together, the two databases, to try to find commonalities. They may find that you went to a certain website on a certain day, and then, you know, you attended a conference a week later. Maybe it was a anti-Islam conference mm-hmm. or something like that. And lo and behold, this information ends up in the hands of the local police, or in the case that I wrote about,
yeah,
in the hands of the state police, West Virginia State Police, which ended up making a visit to the home of a local activist in Charleston, West Virginia, Miss Brenda Arthur.
Let me just say a few words about her, because
yeah,
she could represent almost any listener out there today. You're right. She got the attention of a police unit, and she's certainly not involved in terrorism, organized crime, for that matter, any kind. She's frankly a senior citizen who hasn't broken a law ever in her life. She's a professional gal, and apparently, nonetheless, a fusion center interrupted her life in a very abrupt and shocking way.
Yes, an officer of the law, a sergeant for the West Virginia State Police Criminal Intelligence Unit, stopped by her house on March the 8th of this year, and she was either not home or didn't hear him knocking, so he left his business card with his intimidating title on the front, of course, and on the back he scrawled in his own pen, "Brenda, please call me back to discuss something." And so she sees this business card left at her door, and she is a little bit, you know, worried. Why in the world would a state police criminal intelligence officer be calling me? Actually, she wasn't that worried to begin with, because she figured, well, maybe, you know, the police are getting ready to do a drug bust or something in my neighborhood, and they're wondering if I've seen anything out of the ordinary. But then when she called him and said, "What is this about?" He came right out and told her that it was her involvement in an open records request through the West Virginia Freedom of Information Act about a local mosque project that had the police concerned about the 66, almost 67-year-old woman who is a Jewish American, has never broken a law in her life, is the chapter head for ACT for America, which is your listeners may have some familiarity.
Yeah, we have Brigitte on all the time. Leo, let me just quote John Whitehead here, because he's speaking into this. And he said, John Whitehead, and he's from the Rutherford Institute. Most of my listeners know of Rutherford. Fusion centers know no boundaries, including the U.S. Constitution. This is John Whitehead. And then he says, the word mosque, it's key words like that. If you don't like mosques, they're going to be after you. They're watching you, because everything is determined by algorithms. And being an activist also draws the attention of the Fusion Center. Whitehead has a strict advice for any law-abiding citizen who is approached by law enforcement asking questions about their personal activities. If they come to your door, do not talk to them. If they call you on the phone, do not talk to them. Whitehead said the intimidation tactics used by Fusion Centers are similar to the East German Stasi and other secret police agencies. Okay, I find this really troubling, and I think any of my listeners would, and besides that, any of my listeners could become a victim of this, and how do we protect ourselves?
Number one, follow the advice of Mr. Whitehead. I think our friend Brenda Arthur was caught so off guard by this that she called him and gave him way more information than he was entitled to about her activism. Brenda is probably one of the most successful activists in the entire ACT for America lineup across the country. She's had considerable success lobbying state legislators and appointed officials, keeping, you know, the refugee population from being increased. So we really feel like she was targeted, and that this was a direct attempt to intimidate her. And so we must not be intimidated if we haven't broken any laws, which Brenda has not. And she has been in touch with the Rutherford Institute. She, like you, had never heard of a fusion center. She called me, and I put the pieces of the puzzle together, and we found out that it was the West Virginia Fusion Center who was involved in this. And they actually had hired a new director just a month or so before she got that knock on the door. A young woman took over the West Virginia Fusion Center and had the goal publicly stated of increasing the use of these, what they call suspicious activity reports, SARs, and that's what was filed apparently against Brenda Arthur.
Right.
Someone in her city hall who saw her down inspecting the public documents on the mosque project turned her into the Fusion Center. This is a diabolical process that's going on, where these fusion centers, which were set up, Jan, to monitor mosques and monitor Islamic terrorists, are now being turned against American citizens who have concerns about these mosques.
All right.
It's insidious. Follow the advice of John Whitehead. Mm-hmm. If you're ever contacted in this way, do not speak to them. Tell them that they have no right to talk to you, and if they want information, to contact your lawyer.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have on the line from the East Coast Leo Homan. He's the author of the stunning book, and I am going to call it that, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. And you can find that at his website, leohoman.com. Last name is H-O-H-M-A-N-N, leohoman.com. Find the book there. I do recommend it. And Phil Haney speaks into this as well, a retired Homeland Security officer who's been on my program many times, said fusion centers like the one that targeted Arthur operate with impunity and have flipped the focus of their analytics from potential terrorists to American citizens who are concerned about Islamic terrorists. He says, everything is upside down and backwards. That sounds like Isaiah 5:20. The people who are actually concerned, curious, or take the initiative to protect their communities from the Islamic threat, they are the ones who are now considered the threat. And the ones who were originally supposed to be the threat are now the victims, says Phil Haney. Brenda had her constitutional rights violated, and the worst part of it is her accuser remains faceless. Nobody knows where it is coming from. And then, Leo, you write, you say, many of these tactics were stolen from former Soviet bloc agencies that merged law enforcement with spy agencies, but with the advancement in technology, these tactics become less obvious to the average citizen. They fly under the radar, not in your face, until you get a knock on the door like Brenda Arthur did. Leo, look, under Donald Trump, some of this kind of not going away. I mean, obviously we've got issues with our FBI, but my hope was that some of this kind of intrusion might be a little bit less under Donald Trump. No?
No. What you've heard of the deep state,
yeah,
and your listeners,
yes,
have heard.
We talk about it here.
State. Well, this is the deep, deep state.
Okay.
If it were to get changed, it would have to come perhaps in a Donald Trump second term. There are still top officials, I guess is my point, who are part within the FBI, you know, in the top rung of the leadership, who are part of the deep state. When you talk about fusion centers, you are talking way down, you know, the line. Every state has one, as I said earlier, and there are multiple fusion centers in some states. They're all staffed by people within the last 10 years, basically, and you know that most of those were people under the Obama administration, which we know what type of people he appointed,
right.
And then those appointees hired people under them, and right on down the line. So where you get to these fusion centers, they're staffed by people who are doing the bidding, in a lot of cases, of the Muslim Brotherhood, which we know had a seat at the table.
That's right.
A very prominent
an
seat,
honored
at the table,
seat at the table.
At DHS and the FBI during the Obama administration.
Okay. Let me phrase this question to you, and let's just say, for the sake of our discussion here, listeners know that suddenly there's going to be a mosque built in their neighborhood, perhaps very, very near to their home. For instance, I mean, here in Minneapolis-St. Paul area, we're often called Little Mogadishu here. We have mosques springing up simply everywhere.
Sure.
So what is a good patriotic citizen supposed to do when they learn that a mosque is coming to their, maybe down the street? I mean, I go back to Phil Haney's book, See Something, Say Something, but we really know that in the current climate in Washington, it's kind of see something, say nothing. And, you know, that really troubles people because they're trying to be proactive and stay on top of the issues and be a early radar signal for their community. So a mosque is going to be built. What do they do?
Well, Jan, there's several things they can do. Number one is the first priority should be to fight it on zoning grounds. If the mosque is going into a residential area, which they often like to do, then you have certain elements under your zoning laws that would preclude a mosque from being built there. You know, you can look at impact on traffic, water, sewer supply. You know, is the city paying or subsidizing for any of the water sewer extensions? If so, demand as a taxpayer to find out how much and whether that is legal and whether it's, you know, whether that same accommodation is being made to churches and other groups trying to expand. You could also fight it on environmental grounds if there are sensitive areas where the mosque is being built. Unfortunately, a city cannot deny a mosque,
yeah,
simply because it is a mosque. There's a federal law, RLUIPA, don't ask me what it stands for, that's an acronym, but it's a law that prevent any government, state or local, from discriminating on the basis of any religious matter in the handing out of zoning permits or construction permits. And so there's absolutely no grounds where you could fight a mosque by simply saying, we don't agree with this religious ideology that the mosque represents. But I do believe that one other thing we could do is research the funding of the mosque, who is paying for it. Mm-hmm. If we could find out, for instance, that the money came from a foreign entity in Saudi Arabia, that could perhaps sway some of your council members to vote against it as well.
Okay.
But even that might have to be done, you know, just through phone conversations. One of the things that the Justice Department did under Obama and continue to do under Jeff Sessions in the first year, I don't know, I think it's starting to slow down, but they would sue any community that denied any mosque or threatened to sue, and if the county or city did go ahead and deny it, they would get sued.
Well,
we saw this happen in Michigan, Massachusetts, Minnesota, all over the place. And so, you know, they would even subpoena the city council members' emails to see what type of conversations were had back and forth with members of the community. And if anything was said against the Muslim faith, against Islam, then they would say, this was not denied on zoning grounds.
All right.
This was denied on the basis of discriminating against a religion. You don't need to send any emails. Call them on the phone.
Here's what's going to happen to some of my listeners. It's called Meet Your Muslim Neighbor. I want to play. It's a very short clip, and we're going to take our first break after this, and I want to come back and continue our discussion. But this is talking about, this is going on all over America, Meet Your Muslim Neighbor.
100 people in the East gathered at a local mosque today to learn more about culture and religion at the Meet Your Muslim Neighbor event in Greenville. WNCT's Tamara Scott has more on why the Muslim community is opening their doors.
Some people criticize us because they don't understand our religion. And some people call us terrorists because they don't know fully our religion.
Today, people of all walks of life came together at the Al-Masjid Islamic Center in Greenville. Some eager, others doubtful, but most simply curious about the Islamic religion.
My question is, can you tell us more about the call to prayer?
But not everyone is open-minded.
I have a friend who said, oh, be careful going there. You don't know what you're going to find. I was like, what?
Jean Fitzpatrick says afterwards she has a better understanding of the faith, but also the people around her.
I don't know anything about the Muslim religion. I don't know much about anything. I didn't know the difference between Islam and Muslim stuff. So it meant a lot to me to even see that it was offered. And it was a wonderful experience.
Spokeswoman Summer Bodwin says that's the idea of their event, to extinguish misconceptions and the idea of grouping people together.
One Muslim representing a whole group of Muslims, just as one Christian representing a whole group of Christians. That's not who we are. And that's not who they are. And that's not how any group is. You can't base it on a group. You base it on the individual.
Abdul Rahman says he sees how cruel the world can be, so he hopes people leave today with a more peaceful understanding.
We should all treat people equally, even if you're Jewish, Muslim, Islamic. It doesn't matter. We should all treat everybody equally.
In Greenville, Tamara Scott, 9 on your side.
When I get back, I want to talk a little about, well, we're going to reference something we've talked about kind of consistently on this program, immigration jihad. Who brings some of the refugees to the Western world? A lot of Christian agencies and others, and I'm going to name a few of them, and just what is the benefit to these agencies when they do bring some of these refugees on board here? We'll talk about that and a lot more when I get back. Don't go away.
Today's Understanding the Times broadcast is being brought to you by our ministry partners, those faithful listeners who've made a financial commitment to support this program. Without our partners, we could not tell the inconvenient truth of the gospel every weekend from coast to coast. You too can become a partner. We welcome your tax-deductible gifts when you write to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. You can also give securely at our website, olivetreeviews.org. Today's program is available on compact disc. To order your copy, call 763-559-4444. Again, phone 763-559-4444. Jen returns with more from Leo Holman right after this.
Understanding the Times 2018 is not that far away. Saturday, September 29th, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Please note the earlier starting time. There are still tickets available for $10, $15, and $20. Visit our website, olivetreeviews.org, and go to conferences or contact brushfire.com. I'll give you an 800 number as soon as you get a pencil and paper. Don't miss the like-minded fellowship as well, as our cutting-edge speakers include Pastor Jack Hibbs, Pastor J.D. Farag, Pastor Billy Crone, Eric Barger, and Amir Sarfati. Headlines today are a harbinger of his return. We'll unpack that Saturday, September 29th. Learn to be a watchman on the wall. We live in challenging times, but things aren't falling apart. They're falling into place. Learn how at Understanding the Times 2018. For tickets, order online or call Brushfire at 888-338-5338. That's 888-338-5338. The conference will be live streamed on our website, olivetreeviews.org, at no cost.
Well, refugee resettlement centers in the U.S. are laying off staff and shrinking operations at the direction of the U.S. State Department. The Trump administration has accepted only about 10,000 in the first half of fiscal year 2018. That's the lowest rate in the program's 38-year history.
He can ban Muslims, he can ban Seventh-day Adventists, he can ban Catholics, he can ban Jews. And I'm telling you right now, we got to stand for each other right here, right now.
On Understanding the Times Radio today, you're hearing from investigative reporter Leo Holman. Holman specializes in the issues of refugees, global migration, and immigration. Most of last year, Holman's recent publication, Stealth Invasion, was listed among Amazon.com's top 10 books on immigration policy. Now let's go back to Leo Holman's conversation with Jan Markell.
And welcome back. And again, you just heard the promo about my fall conference. Remember, you got to have a ticket this year. It's the only way the church would even allow us to come back. So some of you who are not happy, we had no choice because of the crowding conditions. Again, call Brushfire Agency, 888-338-5338. Again, that's the Brushfire. You can go to brushfire.com and do it all online. 888-338-5338 if you don't want to do it online. I did tease in the last segment that I do want to talk about a few other issues here that I consider of great importance, including some of the agencies that are bringing some of the Muslims from countries that, quite frankly, despise us, bringing them to the Western world and particularly the United States. And we're talking a little bit about the Get to Know Your Muslim Neighbor. And that was an activity, happened to be Centerline, Michigan, population small town, surrounded by a larger Warren, where thousands of Muslim migrants have arrived over the years, brought there by resettlement agencies, industries, and universities. And that being the case, the Muslim Society is co-sponsoring with the city of Centerline a Get to Know Your Muslim Neighbor event at the public library. That was this past winter. And I'm talking for the hour with Leo Holman. He is author of the book I recommended last July, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. Find it at leoholman.com. Leo, just a couple of things here. I did indicate I want to talk a little bit about these agencies. We've got Lutheran Social Service, we've got Catholic Charities, we've got World Relief, which is a branch of National Association of Evangelicals, and at one time, I think, I believe even now, they get up to, is it $2,100 per refugee, and these agencies keep half of that then?
They are paid by the head, by our tax dollars, that's correct, around $2,100 per refugee mm-hmm. that they secretly, in most cases, bring into these communities with, you know, no say-so from the local community. They plant them in your community, they give them about 3, 4, 5 months of aid, and then they move on to the next batch of refugees and let them fend for themselves. And yes, it is a very much a money-making operation for these resettlement agencies.
And apparently they're hurting. And Donald Trump has reduced the number of refugees substantially. As a matter of fact, more Christians seem to be coming in now. So these agencies may be hurting a bit now, correct?
This is true. At the current pace, we're right now halfway through the fiscal year. If we continue on the current pace, the Trump administration will bring in about 21,000 refugees for the year. That compares to an average of about 75,000 a year under President Obama. So they are hurting. They're closing offices. They're cutting staff members. They're poor-mouthing and whining in the mainstream media in many cases. But they should start passing the hat in their churches and raising money from private sources if they want to continue these resettlements.
Well, outfits like World Relief used to be extremely missionary-minded, but now, and maybe they still are, I simply don't know, but now they are accepting so much tax-funded money that they probably have compromised a bit. I think you would agree with me there.
Well, there's no question, Jan. In fact, they're in the contract that World Relief and the other eight resettlement agencies signed with the U.S. State Department, they have to agree. One of the things they must sign off on and agree to do is not to evangelize the refugees,
yes,
not to proselytize. So this is something they cannot deny. It's right there in writing in their contract that in order to get the federal tax dollars, they must not proselytize the refugees.
Yep, and we actually talked about that last summer when we talked about issues in your
book. Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. Okay. You write about, Leo Homan, about a 24-hour hotline where people can turn in an employer who might have some anti-Muslim thoughts or sentiment, and this currently exists in various cities, including Minneapolis, Nashville, Boston, San Francisco, New York. It is encouraged by the United Nations. And what might happen to such a person who is turned in by this, anybody who's calling this hotline?
Well, yeah, it could be an employer. It could be a teacher at a public school, you know, and the ramifications would vary by state or city, depending on the law. But in many cases, you know, you might get a warning the first time. The second time, you're going to have a fine. So that's going to certainly impinge upon your freedom of speech. If, say, you're a teacher and you're not teaching exactly according to the curriculum, which is, we all know, slanted towards Islam in many of these social studies curriculums, perhaps you're going to give the true history of Islam, and it's a very bloody history. One of your students could call one of these hotlines and say, you know, my teacher at such and such a school is very anti-Muslim, and I detect a high level of Islamophobia going on in the classroom, and she's really influencing students to hate Muslims. She seems like a hater. And so that would launch an investigation, and if it's found to be, if there's found to be evidence that you have been saying or doing anything that would be considered discriminatory or biased against Muslims or Islam, then you would certainly face a fine coming your way. If not the first time, certainly if you did it again, you would be fined.
You write, with the influx of migrants has come tensions in the communities, schools, workplace, etc., as Muslims are encouraged by CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, and other Muslim Brotherhood influence groups to assert their right and place demands on the receiving communities. Demands include prayer rooms, special washrooms in the schools and university, exceptions to dress codes in the workplace, halal food in the jails, schools and hospitals, and tolerance of strange cultural practices like the Muslim call to prayer blown over loudspeakers. A controversial mega mosque planned for a residential area has divided the community of Sterling Heights. That happens to be, I believe, in Michigan. You know, I think my question to you, Leo, and this is a question followed by a comment, is are we losing our First Amendment rights to free speech over the Islamic issue? As I ask that, I am aware of back in April, a Christian conference was blocked in about five cities in the upper Midwest. Hotels canceled this event. The speakers were going to speak out against the very issues you and I are talking about. So there was a Christian conference scheduled in five cities where the hotels in all five cities, my understanding, canceled the event. And it sounds to me like the issue of Islam is the issue that's causing the loss of free speech.
I think there's absolutely no question, Jan, that we are losing our First Amendment rights to free speech. And it's all coming down from the United Nations,
yes.
which, as you know, in 2011 passed Human Rights Resolution
yes.
1618.
Yes.
And that resolution encouraged all the nations of the world to adopt laws that punish people for criticizing or defaming a religion. No particular religion was mentioned in the resolution, but we all know that there's only one religion in the world that is so sensitive and
That's
so
right.
easily taking offense at anything critical about that religion, and that is Islam. Any other religion can be discussed openly, can be criticized openly, even mocked openly without a punishment or a state penalty. But if you try to have a decent discussion or debate about Islam, where both sides are presented, including the what we consider the dangers of Islam, the violent nature, the intolerant, the child bride, the honor violence, all of these negatives, if we're to bring those out publicly, that would be a crime, or should be a crime, according to the United Nations Resolution 1618. And since that was adopted in 2011, with, I might add, the help of Hillary Clinton, who was the Secretary
That's right.
of State
That's
at that
right.
time, since that time we've seen democracies in the West, throughout Western Europe, you know, England, Sweden, Germany, France, Belgium, Netherlands, all adopt Canada now as well, all adopting these hate speech laws where nobody can say or write anything in the public domain that is critical of this one religion, Islam. And we've seen it already trying to get a foothold, that same mentality here in the United States, with Marco Rubio's Senate
Yes.
Resolution 118, which was passed by the Senate 1 year ago in April 2017 by unanimous consent. Can you imagine, Jan, not one single U.S. senator stood against this resolution, which said that it should be that cities, counties, and states should make it a priority to come against any hate crimes against Islam. It didn't mention Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It only mentioned
mm-hmm.
Islam and other minority religions. Apparently it's okay to criticize Christianity, but not Islam. And Marco Rubio co-sponsored that with Susan Collins and Dianne Feinstein and Kamala Harris. Thank God it did not pass the House, because that would have been a stepping stone to a hate speech law, I believe. It was a resolution, which doesn't have the power of law, but it would have been a first step towards a full law imitating these European laws that were all advised mm-hmm. to be passed by the UN.
I'm going to play a short clip here of Ann Corcoran, and she's going to outline a problem that is extremely prominent in my home state, Minnesota, and it's obviously not just in Minnesota, but for some reason, for the last 35 years, we have been the recipient of probably a couple hundred thousand, certainly 100,000, between 1,000 and 200,000, primarily Somali refugees coming here.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English, and subsidized housing was scarce. I wanted to know, who gave permission for what amounted to a dropping off of needy people in our county seat? So I began my research and posted everything I learned to a blog, Refugee Resettlement Watch, so that others might know what I learned about a federal program that is 35 years old this year. In summary, I discovered that the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees was choosing most of our refugees. It's under the influence of a group called the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Not surprisingly, a large number of U.S.-bound refugees are coming from countries with large numbers of people who hate us, including Somalia, Afghanistan, Iraq, and soon from Syria, just to name a few. The U.S. State Department then distributes the refugees to 9 major federal contractors, 6 of which are so-called religious charities, but all are largely funded from the U.S. Treasury. They're not passing the plate on Sundays for the $1 billion price tag for the resettlement. And that figure does not include the extensive welfare benefits refugees receive. The refugees are then sent to over 190 cities and towns in the U.S. where the 9 major contractors support 350 subcontractors. The refugees receive help from the subcontractor for up to 6 months, and the subcontractor then submits paperwork to admit the relatives of the first group. As the years have passed, I've become increasingly alarmed by the percentage of problematic Muslim refugees admitted and distributed around the U.S. through this program. By the way, the Refugee Resettlement Program is not the only one used for legally admitting Muslims, but it is one of the most important. Many are forming cities within cities. Perhaps you know one where you live, where mosques are being built to consolidate, train, and promote a growing American Muslim population and its Islamic supremacist doctrine called Sharia. This process of Muslim colonization is called the Hijra. Muhammad told his followers to migrate and spread Islam in order to dominate all the lands of the world. He said they were obliged to do so, and that's exactly what they are doing now with the help and support of the UN, the U.S. State Department, and the Christian and Jewish groups assigned to seed them throughout the country. Your tax dollars pay for it all. I've written this little book, Refugee Resettlement and the Hijra to America, so that you will know what is happening to us and what we can do about it. We only need to look to a troubled Europe to see the path ahead for America if we can't stop this migration and stop it soon. There's no reason on earth that we should have brought over 100,000 Somalis and another 100,000 Iraqi Muslims to America. Soon we will be resettling Syrian Muslims in large numbers. The UN at the moment has over 10,000 in a pipeline destined for our towns. The FBI told Congress recently that they cannot be properly screened. If you don't help counter the Hijra, we are, in my opinion, doomed. Over time, this migration will be more devastating to your children and grandchildren and to our country than any terrorist attack could ever be. Learn more at Refugee Resettlement Watch and SecureFreedom.org.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. Have on the line Leo Homan. Find his book that we're basing part of our discussion around at leohoman.com. I'll give that one more time as I go out of the program. Leo Homan, would you agree with Ann Corcoran there when she concluded that this kind of immigration, the kind of immigration issues we're talking about, is actually more dangerous than a terrorist attack?
Oh, 100%, mm-hmm. Yes. All we hear from many of the conservative groups who cover this issue is terrorism, 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 jihadism, you know. But there is another type of jihad that, in my mind, is more sneaky and more subtle and more deceptive. And we all know that the New Testament, the Bible, warns us of extreme deception in mm-hmm. the last days.
Amen.
And that's what I see going on through this civilization jihad. It is the cultural jihad that is being waged in a mostly peaceful way against our Christian culture in this country. And we don't have to have a wave of terrorist attacks to take down this country. All we need is decades of slow, steady erosion of Christian principles and an increasing steady flow of migrants coming in who have no intention of adopting our cultural practices and no intention of assimilating. They do intend, however, to make demands on our society, to change our society, to get special accommodations from our society that we spoke of earlier, the prayer rooms in the schools,
right.
The hospitals, the airports. Why do we need Islamic prayer rooms in public spaces? As Christian people, we're not standing up and putting an end to this and saying, you know, why is my child going to a school that has an Islamic prayer room inside? Do
right.
we have a Christian prayer room inside the school? I demand to have one if you're going to have this Islamic prayer room. But so far, I have not seen American Christians willing to put their neck out and walk out on that limb and stand up for Christ and stand up for Christianity whenever they see these intrusions, these demands for special accommodations, Jan. Have you?
No. And we can take that a step further, Leo Homan. I mean, we can talk about some of the brutal attacks going on against some, in cases, helpless people who are the victims of some of the Muslims coming against. We've got them right here in the Twin City area. A woman was stabbed multiple times. Another one was attacked in a restroom by some of our Somali citizens here. It's not just some of the things we've talked about so far. There's violence going on.
There really is. Yeah, we see these what I call pinprick attacks. We've not had another, you know, 9/11 scope event of something of that magnitude. But we do have and continue to have these pinprick attacks, you know, a stabbing at the mall in St. Cloud,
right.
Minnesota, where 10 people get injured, a couple of them rather severely. And that Somali migrant was put down, shot dead by an off-duty policeman. Who knows how many he may have killed if it hadn't been for that alert policeman. We had the young lady in downtown Minneapolis who was walking home her job at the Apple store shortly after dark, right before Christmas last year. She was attacked and brutally stabbed 14 times by a man she described as a thinly built black man with a Somali accent. You know, we've had the cases of terrorization of whole neighborhoods at Lake Calhoun in the Linden Hills neighborhood of Minneapolis.
That's right.
It goes on and on. Starting to see is covering it up. The police
exactly
is covering it up.
That's where I was going. The police are saying it's motivated by robbery, though it's not so. The media won't say these are migrants from East Africa. So we've kind of got a problem that's multiplied many times over by those who aren't really cooperating and telling the truth. Leo, when I get back, you write an interesting article. I want to talk for a few minutes about it. 10 reasons the global elites won't let Donald Trump end Islamic immigration and ban the Muslim Brotherhood. We can't get to 10 reasons, but you can certainly summarize and give me some reasons why the so-called global elite won't let Trump put an end to some of this. When I get back, I'm coming back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
From coast to coast, every weekend, Understanding the Times Radio airs programs like this one to inform believers about the vital issues of our day. God is on the move in a variety of ways. That's reflected in the current events taking place all over the world. Our goal is simple, to interpret these events through the lens of Scripture and to bring you the best commentary on the signs of the times from Christian leaders who are watchmen on the wall. Help us maintain this timely broadcast. We invite you to become our prayer and financial partner. You can learn more about us online at olivetreeviews.org. We are reachable by phone at 763-559-4444 or by mail at Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. Please stay with us for more from Jan's radio guest, Leo Holman, right after this.
Eighteen years ago, Understanding the Times Radio began on one radio station in the Minneapolis area. We now air on almost 830 stations and around the world electronically. You made that possible. People really do want the inconvenient truth. Radio costs are substantial, so think about a tax-deductible gift to Olive Tree Ministries to keep this message alive. You can give conveniently online at olivetreeviews.org or by calling us at 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444, or just drop a check to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. This is Radio for the Remnant, but let's help the remnant grow by giving them the truth each week on Understanding the Times Radio.
We who support restricting or delaying immigration from terrorist countries are unchristian. When the left starts appealing to Christian morality, you know they're desperate. Liberal elites are the people who have tried to banish Christianity from every aspect of American culture and punish Christians for holding biblical views about life and marriage. Former President Barack Obama famously said in Turkey, "We are not a Christian nation." Now suddenly liberals are accusing us of not being Christian enough. The highest moral obligation of the President of the United States is to protect our citizens, just as it is your moral duty to protect and defend your loved ones.
Understanding the Times continues to wrap up her conversation with Leo Holman. Once again, Jan Markell.
Okay, welcome back. We're winding up an hour with Leo Holman. We'll give his website as I go out of the program. And why don't you sign up for my print and e-newsletter on my website, olivetreeviews.org. And remember, this program is always posted to my website Saturday morning. And you can even go to oneplace.com, sign up for their mobile app, and the program will be downloaded for you every Saturday morning. And you can get a CD of any program. You might want to consider becoming a CD subscriber, and one one more quick announcement, that 800 number for tickets. There are tickets left for our September 29th conference, and you can call this 800 number, 888-338-5338, 888-338-5338, or just go to olivetreeviews.org to our conference page and click on over to the Brush Fire Agency. So please check that out. All right, I gave a tease in my last segment that I wanted to talk to Leo about an article that he wrote, 10 Reasons the Global Elites Won't Let Donald Trump End Islamic Immigration, and for that matter, ban the Muslim Brotherhood. Leo, we don't have time for 10 reasons, but I want you to summarize what you've written, because this is so important. And, you know, who do you consider the global elites? Let's start with that, and then help us understand their thinking.
I'm speaking from the top down there. Everyone from the very top, George Soros is the Barack Obama's, the Clintons, the Bushes, all the way down to, it filters really, all the way down to your governor, your state legislators, and even sometimes in many cases your city councilors. They represent the establishment. And I saw up close and personal the face of the establishment recently when myself, Phil Haney, and Jim Simpson, three people who've been on the front lines of this issue, went to South Dakota in February to testify before a state Senate committee in South Dakota in favor of a bill that would have declared a moratorium on the refugees coming into that state. And the enemy, we saw it in our faces. It was led by the Republican governor, Dennis Duergaard, Tanisa Islam, a female attorney affiliated with CARE, and the Chamber of Commerce in the state of South Dakota. Those were the three main forces aligned against us testifying against the bill as we were there testifying in favor of it. Most people still think of the Chamber of Commerce as a conservative organization. Right. It is not. Most of our Republican governors are not conservative on this issue of third world refugees. And the reason is they want them to come in to fill holes in the workforce. In the case of Minnesota and South Dakota, it is mostly the meatpacking industry. Mm-hmm. In other cases, it's the hotels, cab drivers at the airports, the theme parks in Florida. They're all hiring these cheap labor refugees, okay? It also fills up the mosques that are being built, like we talked about earlier, in communities across the country. We now have more than 3,200 mosques in this country. They need dues-paying members. This does that for them. It fills the voter rolls for the Democratic Party.
That's right.
70% of Muslims vote Democrat. More than 70% vote Democrat. It fills the coffers of these federal contractors that we spoke about earlier. It brings money into these resettlement agencies. Oh, another big reason, Jan, is the United States colleges and universities. They love tuition-paying Arab students from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, Yemen, the UAE, Pakistan, India, Turkey. These students pay the full tuition bill. They don't get discounts and financial aid in most cases like American students do. So they're cash cows for the universities. We've seen the debate over whether we should ask people filling out census forms if they are American citizens. Donald Trump says we should do this. That's the last thing that the establishment wants, because the cities in the Rust Belt, especially cities like Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Minneapolis, Baltimore, Cleveland, they're all what? They're all dying. They're losing population.
Right.
And if they're losing population, that means they're losing clout at the state capitol. They're getting fewer representatives going to the state capitol to represent the big city interests as opposed to rural interests. So a good way for those cities to maintain their populations and replace people who are dying, Americans are getting older, dying, or fleeing to the suburbs, bring in illegal immigrants and refugees. It boosts their numbers and keeps their clout powerful at the state capitol. Okay, so you can see all of these reasons are aligned, and I have many more in this article that people can go to my website and read. The stars are not exactly aligned in Trump's favor when he talks about ending or controlling Islamic immigration, and even if he does, look for the next president to speed it up and make up for lost time.
Sure.
I really think as Christians we need to start planning for a time in the not-too-distant future where we will be seen increasingly as the enemy and our freedom of speech will be curtailed. We will be losing public platforms and public outlets in which to express our views without horrific consequences. These are things we need to be praying about and planning for.
You can learn more at leohoman.com. That's H-O-H-M-A-N-N, leohoman.com. And there you can find his book as well. And the book is titled Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement, Jihad. And as we're talking there a little bit, or as you were talking, Leo, about the 10 reasons global elites won't let Trump end Islamic immigration and ban the Muslim Brotherhood, then it sounds like the Muslim Brotherhood is not going to go on a terrorist list. Is that what you feel?
Well, so far it hasn't. I really would advise President Trump to do this because, as I state in the article, by poking around the extremities of this beast, this Muslim Brotherhood beast, he is really, in many cases, possibly causing more harm than good, because you know what happens when you poke a hornet's nest.
Mm-hmm.
You have to destroy that hornet's nest. You cannot just poke and prod it. That's going to cause more hornets, as I say in the article, bigger and badder than the original hornet dwellers who were in that nest, to come out and swarm and attack at the first opportunity. And so we're actually going to see more offenses against the Christian majority in this country, more attempts to shut down our free speech, more rallies to shut down, as you said, conferences
yeah.
where Christians are giving solid advice on how we should be dealing with these problems. We have Antifa coming out.
That's right.
That's one of the big nasty hornets, even in some cases worse than the Islamic hornets. They have these alliances with these left-wing communist Marxist mm-hmm. agitators like Antifa coming out and stirring up violence against us and shutting down conferences. This is going to only escalate if we don't deal with the problem and go to the core of the problem, which is the Muslim Brotherhood beast. I really think President Trump needs to act and act quickly to declare this organization a terrorist front.
And you write about Mohammed Elibieri, who is a Muslim Brotherhood operative, and you write, widely known that Muslim Brotherhood operative Mohammed Elibieri penetrated a fusion center in Texas a few years ago, used its data to expose patriotic citizens. Elibieri served as Obama's Homeland Security Advisory Board member and was later appointed to the White House Working Group on Countering Violent Extremism. The CVE program, with test pilots Minneapolis, Boston, Los Angeles, was designed as a new approach to fighting terrorism, focusing not on Islam as the major catalyst, but broadening the parameters to extremism in all its forms. It turned the government's focus away from the Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated Islamic groups and onto right-wing extremists. And you say, Leo, through his positions on the Homeland Security Panel and the CVE Steering Committee, Elibieri has access to intelligence information through the DHS Fusion Center in Texas. He was suspected of leaking this information in 2011 to a news outlet in an effort to damage the presidential campaign of former Texas Governor Rick Perry, whom he tried to paint as an Islamic. Islamophobe, and I could go on, but that's the Muslim Brotherhood. That's just a tiny picture of the Muslim Brotherhood. They are big, big trouble.
Yes, the Muslim Brotherhood is extremely well organized, extremely well funded, and embedded, unfortunately, in many of our federal government agencies. And it's really just all about redefining that word terrorist. This was my concern back in 2002, 2003, when all these federal agencies were being set up under the new Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
I worried back then that at some point in the future that we could redefine this word terrorist and somehow deviate away from the real threat, which is the Islamic threat, and refocus it on some other imagined threat, you know, for instance, Christianity or conservative biblical Christianity. And it seems like some of my fears, unfortunately, have been realized under the Obama administration. He still has these people embedded in the agencies. We hope President Trump can start to dismantle this deep state and get rid of some of these Obama holdovers, get rid of all of them. But it will take time. I do know that.
Well, again, folks, check out Leo's book. We talked about it last summer, and we revisited it almost a year later here in Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. Learn a lot more at leohoman.com. And I want to thank you, Leo, for the patriot that you are. We do appreciate it. I do want to go out of the program, though, with a couple of Bible verses, because I'm going to close with a couple of verses. We hear about government dysfunction and government out of control, and it says in Isaiah 33:6 that only God is the stability of our times. Washington is not London, not Paris. And then let us say with the psalmist, I trust in you, O Lord. Our times are in your hands, and indeed they are. Things aren't falling apart, they're falling into place. I want to thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for joining us for today's Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. Across America and across the World Wide Web, we continue to report current events from a biblical perspective. Every weekend, this broadcast comes to you at no cost, but it costs us thousands of dollars. As we produce and distribute this weekly media outreach, would you consider standing with us? With an ever-changing world, men and women of faith need to keep informed. They need to be aware of current events as viewed through the lens of Scripture. Week after week, Jan Markell brings you a compelling hour, pointing out the dangers in today's culture and bringing hope through faith in Jesus Christ. We're asking you to join us in this listener-supported ministry as our financial partner. Please write with your tax-deductible gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Contributions are also welcome at olivetreeviews.org or by phone when you dial 763-559-4444. Don't forget, global updates with a biblical worldview are yours around the clock at olivetreeviews.org. We look forward to hearing from you soon. We appreciate your continued prayer support for Jan and her media team. Jan Markell returns next week with another information and inspiration-packed hour designed to help you understand the times.